Hey guys, it's Lavetta.
And it's Miriam.
And this is the Notorious Women Podcast, a comedy podcast about some of history's most notorious women.
Some of these queens are heroic.
And some of these bitches are horrific. But we think the most interesting thing of all is that they're all notorious.
Hi guys, welcome to a very special episode. Today we are interviewing two amazing women. I'm going to look at this paper to make sure I pronounce their names right, because I'm bad with names. Fun fact about me. We have Lori Zimmer and Maria Krasinski. And I
nailed
said it,
it
right.
Nailed it.
I deserve a medal. So, you guys, I found Lori because she wrote a book called I Am Not Your Muse. And in this book, it turned out it was designed by, right, illustrated, would we say?
Illustrated
by Maria. And it's the most beautiful book. It's really, it's called I Am Not Your Muse. And I want to hear more about how you were inspired by it. But it looks like the combination of the two of you, of Lori and Maria, creating this thing is magical. It's a seamless book. That's...
Thank you.
It's really, really beautiful.
We're pretty good together.
I'm going to take that word, seamless. I like that. Can we blurb that? Yeah. Can we blurb you?
Yeah. Absolutely.
I don't know what blurb means. Is that a thing?
It's like those little quotes on a book when you see the back. And sometimes it's just one word, like a film trailer. Mind-blowing. Publishers Weekly.
Listen,
as long as I can tell my friends and family that I'm a blurb,
you got blurbed.
Yes. Yes.
You're a blurber.
Yeah. I'm a blurber.
We'll blurb you.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Thank you.
Love it.
Add that to your CV.
Right.
Exactly.
Of random things I'm good at.
Same. Sounds like me.
So, Lori and Maria, you created this beautiful book that when I started reading the opening, I was like, oh my God, they are us and we are they.
Because, you know, listening to your podcast, I felt the same way. So here we are. This is,
meant to be.
Meant to be.
Only a matter
of time. Truly, truly,
Can you tell us, let's start with Lori, what inspired you to write this specific book? Because I haven't really talked much about what it is exactly, but I want you to because,
So Maria and I, this is our third book together our little
third.
Lovely. Yes, we met in fourth grade in a gifted, talented program in our little town outside of Buffalo, New York. And I'm just going to take you on a journey of that, and you can edit it out if you want to. But
I love a journey. We're editing nothing.
Yes. We're on a journey.
Exactly.
Yeah. I do a lot of bragging about Maria because she is seriously the most impressive person I've ever met in my life. But 2017. Impressive.
Okay, if you're not on YouTube right now, you don't know that what Maria did. Total side note, we're veering away for a moment. Maria just ran her first marathon.
I just ran the Paris Marathon 2 days ago.
And she's only 17 years old.
Yeah.
15.
Plus,
and she's still alive.
Minus, you know, 35
years. Right, so we've only known each other for 8 years.
Yeah.
The wee one.
Uh-huh. So we're having a moment.
Okay. So in 2017, she was also impressively in the Peace Corps in Tbilisi in the Republic of Georgia. And I went to visit her. And I've been a writer and working in the art world for the last 15, 20 years. And she was just telling me how much she loved it there because there was a shorter work day and she had so much time to draw and paint. And like, I've known this woman for like over 30 years now. And I said, wait, you draw and paint? What? Like, you do that too? And she showed me some illustration. Yeah, everything she does. Jeez. She showed me some illustrations of, Tbilisi has these amazing crumbling Art Nouveau buildings all over the city, which I'm an architecture nerd. And the drawings just like, I was like, whoa, these are so inspiring. And I was inspired at that moment to write our first book together, which is called Art Hiding in New York, because I had been back in the blog days. Remember those days? Yeah. 2010. Mm-hmm. I had a blog called Art Nerd New York. I was fired in 2009 from my art gallery job. And I suddenly had all this free time. So I would like run around the city, and I'm a nerd, so research things that I never got to pay attention to because I was working for this man all the time. And the blog was basically covering like sculptures and hidden artworks and where artists lived. And I didn't really know what to do with it until I saw those drawings, and it all came together. And I'm like, we're going to do a book. So we wrote and she illustrated the entire book with no plan. Just the worst case scenario was, well, we'll self-publish it. Yeah. We'll do it. We'll make one for each other on what's it called?
Just for fun.
Whatever those small printing
blurb. I think one was called blurb.
Oh my God. We word have of a the theme today.
Blurb is the it's word. Like the secret word on Pee Wee's Playhouse. Mm-hmm,
that's right. I found it.
Everybody scream. So we turned out seamlessly after that. We got an agent immediately. She sold our book immediately. And then after we finished that one, we were spending a lot of time in Paris, just like meeting up here. And Maria has since moved here. So then the second book came out, which is Art Hiding in Paris, same kind of concept. And during the process of, I'm a big research nerd. I keep lists and lists of potential projects and interesting people. I love reading about people. And I started taking note. I kept coming across all these fascinating women that were related to the art world that I had heard of, but not heard enough of, you know, like wives, partners, assistants, models, whatnot. And I kept a list. And all of a sudden that list was like over 50 people.
So many people.
And I was like, this is silly that I don't know anything about 50 people. Yeah. So the book kind of just showed me itself. And the title, I'm Not Your Muse, is my partner of 11 years is an artist. And like I said earlier, I'm 45 years old. I've curated a bunch of art shows. This is my fifth book. Yet to this day, people assume I am his assistant. Like
what?
Like a 45
year old. Of course
they
do. Yeah.
I got an email today asking me about something about his job. And he has an assistant. And so... and you know what? I've posed for his paintings. I've helped him. I've written some stuff for him, but he helps me equally, believe it or not.
That's not the same thing.
He helps me as much. And so I think it's okay to be a muse if it's one tiny adjective that describes you, but people just assume that's it. That's it. Mm-hmm. It's like muse, period. Like you can't possibly be anything else. And that is the case for the women in this book, is they're just dismissed. Like anything that they accomplish for themselves, if someone called them a muse, that was it. That was the defining point of their lives, mostly by the writers of history who really hold all the power. So I want to be a writer of history that holds all the power. So
yeah,
you do.
That's so great. Mm-hmm.
I am.
Yes. That's right.
Or the ones that did have any creative inclinations of their own, they'd be like, oh, she was a muse. She was also an artist in her own right.
Like, in her own right.
It's like, oh, good for her. Like that has become just another drinking game phrase. Just like, oh, not that again.
You know, I never realized how offensive that phrase was, or even how offensive muse was until I took some time to think about it. And
you just have to just switch it around. Like, Ernest Hemingway was a writer in his own right.
Exactly.
Or, despite his marriage to Martha Gellhorn, who was really, I mean, obviously we all know about her.
Badass.
Right.
Yeah.
Astounding. Yeah.
She's amazing. She was on every war front for 60 years, maybe a little more. She was the only woman on the beaches of Normandy on D-Day. She snuck onto a hospital boat because they would not give accreditation to a female. Yeah.
And
we have all studied Martha Gellhorn here in this room right now.
Yep. Yes. Miriam, we should start her on our podcast. Yeah.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
I love her.
She's incredible.
She was in the Middle East in her 80s doing reporting.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. She almost the Bosnian War in the 90s. Yes. I mean, she was.
Yeah, because brilliance is not tied to gender. Nope.
Or age.
Like it's just I'm a Trekkie. I'm a sci-fi person. And so, when you grow up on sci-fi and Star Trek, which is so funny because the whole QAnon thing, I'm like, do you guys not watch Star Trek? Because Star Trek is the most woke thing ever. What are you guys on?
Don't we also feel like we're all like Borg is happening now too?
Oh, yes.
Like yeah. We are Borg.
Yeah. Yep. Yep. Yeah. My name is Locutus. Yeah. And so I grew up knowing like, I'm like, this is why they want to change media. Cause it's like, well, yeah. And also just being a girl and being like, well, boys are very slow. Obviously, I'm smarter than them. I remember vividly turning around like 10 or 11 and somebody's like, you can't do that because you're a girl. I'm like, but everyone knows girls are smarter than boys. Like you said out loud.
That is the root of misogyny right there. It comes from a place of inadequacy. And despite all of the limitations society has put on women over the generations, we still have done stuff. Despite it, like you can't hold us down, world. You can't. We're still going to, the brilliant ones are still going to be brilliant. We're still going to do it. We're going to find a way.
That's kind of how Lavetta and I started this podcast, was that years ago we were talking about how women are just as complex. Like they keep putting us in boxes. Like society keeps trying to find different narratives that contain us. And we have never, ever walked into those boxes with ease. We just haven't.
And we haven't allowed ourselves to stay there.
Yeah.
You know, like we're still going to do. You saddle us with kids. You tell us we can't have credit cards. We're still going to do stuff.
We find a way.
And, you know, I'm curious to know, what are like probably your top three? I know it's hard. It's like choosing. It's like Sophie's Choice at this point. Mm-hmm. What are your like top three muses or non-muses?
Not muses. Maria, I'll let you take the first
hit. Oh, gosh. There's so many. Like who to narrow down to?
I know it's hard. I know it's a hard question. It's just like...
Well, one of the ones we did a couple of talks around the book launch, and one that I like to point out is Edmonia Lewis, who is a sculptor. Yeah. Really, I mean, there's a variety of reasons to be inspired by her and take so much away from her, but the fact is she was working in the 1860s, so almost 100 years before some of the other women featured in the book. I mean, and she was, I mean, this is during the American Civil War. And she is really the first, like one of the first American sculptors even to gain international prominence, but first woman of color. She was of Black and Native American heritage. She was one of the first women to go to Oberlin College, which was the first college to admit women, which was not without its challenges. It is not easy being the first anything. And she had a really rough go there. But, you know, she persevered. She had talent. She had a brother who helped bring her to Boston, and she was able to train in sculpture. She had such an affinity for it and a talent. And she was sculpting, you know, the abolitionists of that time, and sort of built her name and was able to actually build a career contributing to, you know, what was happening in the U.S. at that time, despite all these obstacles. And one side fact is, so she was born in upstate New York in Albany, and Lori and I are both from Buffalo, New York. And when she was kids, she and her brother were raised by their aunts, and they would take them to Niagara Falls, not far from Buffalo, where they'd be sort of selling Ojibwe trinkets and clothing to the tourists.
And moccasins.
And so I like when there's a lot of people in the book who lived and worked in the places that we lived and worked, and so to kind of inhabit some of those spaces.
That's
and
a little magical.
There, it's very magical. And you know, a city like New York where Lori lives, or Paris where I live, like that's everywhere, but you know, it's not often that little Buffalo, New York gets, you know, a little taste of that.
I'm very familiar with Buffalo. I used to go through Buffalo when I was in college. I would catch the Greyhound bus from Ithaca over to Cleveland. And we would stop the Buffalo. We go through Buffalo.
Downtown, baby.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. It's cold.
It is cold. Oh, yeah. Lives up to that reputation.
One thing I want to add about Edmonia that you had brought up in our book talks is that, like, being a woman, like, men who were marble sculptors, because she would carve, like her piece, the Death of Cleopatra, that's at the Smithsonian for now. It, you know, it's like this massive marble block, and men, like, a lot, it was common for a sculptor to then hire artisans, Italian artisans, like, you'd bring them the maquette and then they would carve it out. But like, being a woman, she's like, I have to do every step. So she was the one chipping away at that marble block alone. And people don't give recognition to that. She did it from that expression, soup to nuts, all herself.
Right.
Wow.
Exactly.
I'm going to go for number two. I'm going to stick with that buffalo connection, being that we were from there. So one disappointing thing when I was researching this book, disappointing to my Buffalo heritage, is that the first, Louise Blanchard Bethune, was the first woman architect in the United States. And she's from Buffalo. And we were never taught this, ever. Like, our entire lives, and we were both nerds and gifted, talented. We did all these creative things and learned all these extra things, never taught anything about her. And there's this whole hotel in downtown Buffalo, the Hotel Lafayette. It's her crown jewel of her career. It was supposed to open for the Pan American Exposition, but, you know, funding, everything, whatever. Construction always takes longer. And it opened in 1904. It was one of the top 15 hotels in the United States. The New York Times wrote an article about it, which was a big deal, I guess, to write about Buffalo, which did not name her. She had her own, 1881 is when she became licensed to be an architect, had her own firm with her husband. They had a kid, and they shared parenting duties with the kid.
A man parented his child?
He seemed 100 years ago.
Pretty awesome.
It happened.
He didn't babysit his child. He just was the dad, like, right?
That could be a parent.
But the article, it lists, like, the financier, it lists the construction, the man who ran construction, it lists the man who rented the seventh floor, like, everything. And then at the end, it says, many prominent men were in attendance. But have you ever heard of an article about a building that doesn't list the architecture firm?
Never.
No. So clearly it was purposeful. But that hotel has, I used to go to raves in the basement in the 90s.
It was closed and kind of dilapidated.
It was an SRO. Oh. The entire ground floor was a pawn shop, and it was pretty gross. Buffalo was rough in the 70s, 80s, and 90s. But it has since, in 2012, $2 million project renovated it and brought it back to Louise's grandeur. And I'm trying to, I mean, I don't live in Buffalo anymore, so I don't really have any power pull, but I really think the city should do a Louise Blanchard Bethune Day, where you ride.
Why not?
She was also the first woman in Buffalo to have a bicycle. And she started a women's bicycle, because, you know, bicycles were a feminist object. You could suddenly be on your own, your own transportation. Yeah. And, she's buried at Forest Lawn Cemetery, which was designed by Olmsted. It's gorgeous. I'm obsessed with it. Not because I'm goth, but I just love cemeteries. History, you know? And I really think we should, her birthday was in July, ride our bikes from her grave downtown to the hotel, and there's a park in front of it, and have lunch and just, like, you know, gaze at the grandeur of her.
I think you can do it. And here's why. Because we live in America. I live in America. Lori and I live in America. So we know that money talks. Money talks.
Yeah.
All you got to do is charge everyone $5 to celebrate. Yeah. And the city will make money. And a great woman will be honored.
I don't need the money. I'll donate it. Yeah. It's pretty incredible. You know what I'm saying?
Like, just tell them, right, that, like, oh, we can do this whole thing. And we'll it'll be a fundraiser for the city.
I think you're right about that, though. Tell instead of ask is sort of how we should be.
Because asking has not gotten us very far. I'm just saying.
No.
And it's not even asking for forgiveness, not permission. It's just,
this is what we're going to do. And here's how we're going to do
apologies.
It. And you're going to love it. I'm very positive.
You're gonna love it. You're gonna. I mean, who doesn't like a picnic anyway? In the summertime, Buffalo is kind of a magical time. It's not too hot, and there's a lot of stuff going on.
But okay, in Southern California.
For the third?
Too hot.
The third. Oh, yeah, you get it all the time.
Yeah.
You see, I think you have to have the winter to appreciate the summer, you know, the good and the bad, the yin and the yang.
What do you mean? We have earthquake season and rainy season. Oh, we have fair, different fair. Seasons.
You're either hiking or you're swimming. It's one or the other. I lived in New York for 15 years, and every single February, I lost my mind. Yeah, I never got used to it.
I understand the time.
Yeah.
It hits.
I was okay up until then, though. It was pretty. Yeah.
It was 38 degrees when I left New York on Friday to come to Paris, and then it was 69 degrees here, so I'm feeling pretty crazy.
So what I'm saying is, yeah.
Yeah.
It's Paris. April.
Paris yeah. is lovely. The thing they don't tell you about Paris is it is gray 90% of the year.
True.
Like the last year was the grayest and rainiest year in like 100 years. So that is a really great job on their PR manager's front to be like, yes. Paris is magical and beautiful and romantic. And it looks, the gray and the rain looks wonderful on cobblestones when you're visiting for 3 days. But after that's 3 months worth of it, you're like, yeah. I see why you all go to Spain and Portugal.
Sure.
Get me out of here.
I mean, it's just a stone's throw, so.
But at least you can go to Spain and Portugal.
Yeah. Right?
In a way
on a
that
train
I can't.
If you want. the third Not one, Florida. I'm going to cheat and pick three people because this is the last chapter and I put them all together, even though they were all completely deserving of their own chapters. But three artists, Leonora Carrington, Remedios Varo, and Kati Horna. And they were all young women that had passed through Paris during the, you know, the time of the Surrealists. And they were probably 20 years younger than most of the artists. Like Leonora Carrington was with Max Ernst for a while. I believe he might have been 30 years older than her. And although they were accepted, they weren't like accepted as equals in surrealism. Like Dali, André Breton, like they all pretty much said that women as artists can't be taken seriously. Mm-hmm. But, you know, then World War II happened and everybody had to flee and America was not so great about letting people in. And they all ended up in Mexico City in the same neighborhood. And they kind of knew each other in like a high bye kind of way, but not really. It was just coincidence. And they, so incredible. They formed this incredible friendship bond that like spanned like their artwork. Like they would help each other with all their artwork. They would pose in each other's. So Leonora's paintings, Remedios Varo's paintings, and Kati Horna was a photographer. And Leonora and Remedios would like make sculptures and wearable sculptures, and Kati Horna would take these surrealist photographs of them. They would raise their kids together. They would like everything they did was not with it with competition, sort of like what we were talking about before we started recording. Just like, I think that women are set up to like compete with each other because we're told there's only so many seats at the table. And they were just like, we're just going to create our own thing. They continued surrealism without any outside influence and made it their own and supported each other every step along the way. And I just think that's so beautiful. And like, what an amazing world we would have if we did this for each other, you know, we could just move forward. And so like, I'm very jealous of their relationship and like the works that they produced. They were so prolific because they had each other.
And it's so interesting that you say that amazing. Because I think in a not a perfect world, but a better world that had that's more like sci-fi world, that would be the appropriate way to use the term muse. Right. So that you are working, being inspired by each other, but you're also helping each other. And then you're their muse. They're your muse, and it goes back and
it's
forth,
reciprocal.
Right? But versus the traditional, that's gendered way that a woman is just an object of appreciation or ridicule, that a man, it's the male gaze, right?
Yeah.
It's
they the epitome inspire of male gaze. Greatness in men. Yeah.
And
you
men,
know, like I know that a lot of like I've had people be like, well, men are muses too. And you know what though? Historically, anyone that has been written about, they were in same sex relationships. I'm sure they existed in other ways, but the ones that made it to history books, they're in same sex relationships. There wasn't like, you know, it's still gendered. It's still in the same
it's
kind
so gendered.
Of way.
Yeah. I mean,
but I love that.
Yeah. I definitely think, you know, I don't know about you ladies, but I can be inspired. I have two older brothers. So early on, my brothers were my muse, if we're using it in that, in the correct term, right? And that's in a healthy way. It's not until, like I was saying earlier, until you get like 10 or 11, when they start to put children in categories to say, no, you can't do this, you can't do that. But, you know, where you can find inspiration anywhere, you know, your pet can be your muse, you know, like, all my pets are my muse.
A lot of Instagram accounts that prove that.
Yeah. You know, Grumpy Cat. I know I'm such a sucker.
Rest in peace, Grumpy Cat.
I know.
Grumpy Cat. Like, I'm like, recently I am obsessed with mini schnauzers. I want a mini schnauzer.
Yeah,
I want to put a little mustache and a little beard, little bushy eyebrows on everything because they look like grumpy old men, and they're adorable.
They're paws somewhere.
So it's just like, I just love that the premise of your latest book is that they're not muses in the traditional sense, because we haven't historically, we haven't been using it correctly. It's all gendered. It's also to put the little lady in her place. Right.
Exactly.
When I read your opening of your book, I was like, I'm so mad at this word muse. Like, I didn't even think about it.
Sorry to ruin it for you.
No, I'm happy because I feel like we need as I get older and I get more and more angry about the world, right? The more you learn, I mean, that's where the word woke comes from. You're awake to the problems. Yeah. That's all it is.
That's literally. Period. Yeah. That's it.
And so
you're just aware.
It's important. It's important for the next generations to understand that if they're hearing, oh, you're my muse, double check that. Question that. Yeah. What does that mean? What are they saying? What are they saying? And they don't even know that they're saying. They might not mean it in a bad way.
I like to call it the consolation prize. It's like, okay, honey, here you go. Here's your little medal, you know, like your consolation prize. You get to be called the muse. But it's minimizing.
Yeah.
It's limiting.
Yeah, it's you're not worthy enough to create the thing, but you can inspire it. Yeah, to be an artist, a true artist. It's just like anything that women start, when men get involved, then they push all the women out, right? Like cooking.
Oh my God,
but then when it becomes like professional, like you become a chef, then all the women get pushed out.
I thought a man could not cook any food in this kitchen because they were tired, but now you can run a restaurant. I thought, pick one.
Which is it? Which is it?
Not all men, but always men.
Of course not. Like though we might start saying all men just to get some dialogue online, because it seems like it feels like online now. If you say the dumbest thing, you get all the attention.
You get jumped right over.
Like I said, comment sections are like the de-evolution of humanity. Like, before we didn't have to hear what every person's opinion was, and now we do.
You know, it's like the rise of the C student. I know that's rude. But come on, man. You weren't paying attention the whole time. and now you have a following? Oh, no. Absolutely.
And it's always like, I didn't read the article, but like, they still have so many opinions on it, which is very C student. Like, I didn't actually do the homework, but I'm going to share my thoughts anyway.
Totally.
The teacher just doesn't want the phone call the parent, so they give them a C. Okay.
Yeah. Participation grade.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
Oh God. We're going to get so much hate.
Yeah. I'm looking forward to it. Bring it.
I don't care what a random person on the internet thinks about me, because I just think about how sad it is. Imagine being a person that spends all your time like being angry. Like, it's like blood pressure and like angst, and what a waste of life. There's so many great things to do in life and to be. Yeah. And so like, I just imagine, like, I feel like I see some comments and it's like the same name over and over and over again. Yes. And it's just like, how much of your life is doing this? You could, instead of bettering yourself, you're just like disparaging people that you will never, ever meet in your entire life who don't care what you have to say anyway. It just seems so boring, man. I don't know.
It's like the troll, right? It's like, also because you can put that energy into actually doing something, creating something, I don't know, riding your bike somewhere, like playing with your cat, your dog, like doing something that makes you feel better. But, you know, I mean, the social media things, I realize, and at my big old age, like, you know, you'll be on your phone and it'd be like, oh, it's a notification, and you click on it. And it's just, it's not a real notification.
No.
It's designed to kind of bring you back. And then you, we're all addicted to checking our phones. Right. And it's like, it's not real.
I miss the 90s. I was so free and so connected with myself and present.
Before it all went to hell. Yeah. Like,
the internet was like, it had its own room in your house and you shared it with your family and you visited it once a day and that was enough. And it was, you're like, wow, look at all this stuff I could learn. And then you go out and do something.
you know, it was
like a minimal point of our lives. It was great.
Go out
although
and do
here
something.
We are on the internet today. So,
well, that's, you know, you win some, you lose some. Like, this is magical. This is amazing that we can do this. But also, maybe we should stop reading the comments. I can't help it. It's a problem. Yeah. But what I do, what I've started to do, and it's through our Instagram and our TikTok as Notorious Women. It's not my personal one. But what I try to do is, whatever the troll, if it's something that I was like, I have a very specific argument against what you're saying, I can, like, I will do it. They will retort, you're an asshole. I will say, did you not see the above? And that's it. Because if someone, I'm not going to convince that asshole. Absolutely not. They're probably, no, think, you know, they're
they
probably
don't, they don't matter. I just block people. I don't want anyone that, like, even if they're not interacting with me, if I just see like hate, I just block it because I don't need that energy in my life. But I did kind of start, like, and maybe this is cheesy and I don't even care. I do it for me. Like, I compliment people. I'd be like, you know, especially younger women. And I'm like, you look amazing, or this, or like younger, like singers and blah, 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 blah. Because you know what? Like, I'm sure that makes them feel good. Even if for 1 second, I don't care. And on the street too, I tell women, I'm like, I love that coat. You look great. Because that, when someone says that to me, I do smile and I am in like beaming for a little while, you know?
Lori, you have cracked the Black sisterhood code. That is something that I was talking to Miriam about this, because the 8%, I don't know who they are, who did not vote for Kamala in the last election. If they're around us, they keep that shit to themselves because we will ridicule them. We're not going to ostracize you, but we're going to call you out
because
Black sisterhood is that you compliment each other. You hold each other up. And when you don't, that's why when we watch The Housewives and things like that, it's like, they're just doing that for television because Black women don't operate that way with each other. And if we do, you get called out. Don't bring that over here.
Like, exactly.
It's like, no. You do not bring that over here. This, you know, even if you, we joke about the different kinds of women. We were talking a little bit before we got online about, you know, quote unquote, pick me's or, and you know, you have that problem. You know, you have different people in different groups and the people are not a monolith, but that dissing another woman is not something that we tolerate. And that's something that, I know Miriam and I have been talking and she was like, white women can learn more a little bit more from that. I'm sure there's been think pieces on
completely.
It, but like, that's something that we do not talk. And like I said, that 8%, we don't know who they are because when they're around us, they keep that shit to themselves.
They keep it down. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm sure that white women will take credit for it, but I became hyper aware of how like people talk about women and celebrities and whatnot, especially like just my age, just like aging into middle age, but also writing this book. Like I've I actually have said to a couple of people, I'm like, do you really got to drag like Zendaya? Like she's freaking gorgeous. Like, come on. Like, what does that do? That putting that energy into the world.
And they have, we talked about this in another talk too. These sort of really publicized celebrity divorces or feuds like Johnny Depp and Amber Heard, or what's been happening with Blake Lively and how they just You love them until you hate them, or you build everybody loved Britney, but then she was everyone's favorite punching bag for decades, even when we were younger. Yeah. Yeah. And she's having this sort of resurgence now. And it relates, to bring it back to the book, like another story in I'm Not Your Muse is Nahi Sok, a Korean artist, painter, poet. And she was in her era, I forget the dates, Lori, back me up, but she was really well known and famous and respected until she made the mistake of getting divorced, which completely destroyed her reputation.
And then wrote about it.
And then she wrote about it, which even further scandalized. So it's this idea of like, who's allowed to make mistakes? Who can come back? Right. You know, who is the, especially now with media, social media, everybody has a comment, has something to say.
But women are, muses are supposed to be seen and not heard.
Yeah.
Right?
Exactly. But like, there she has an opinion. The media is so persuasive. Like, I think about being younger and like, I thought Sinead O'Connor was like this crazy person. And then growing up, I'm like, no, she was telling the truth.
The
but
truth.
Like, even me, this, like, I thought I was so forward thinking. No, I fell into it too. You know, it's easy, like, to be manipulated. It is.
Yeah. Well, I'm sorry, Miriam. I think of Mike Tyson and Robin Givens.
Yes.
Oh, remember how they categorized her as sort of like, because you think you did think, you're like, well, he's obviously a meathead and she is a gorgeous, like she must be after his money. Yeah. But then as you become a woman and you get older and you're like, oh no, I could totally see her thinking she's gonna save him.
Yeah.
He's her prince. She kissed him and he went from a frog to a prince and da 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 da. And they're like, she's making him do this. And until Mike Tyson did something to a man, it's like, oh, maybe Robin Givens wasn't so bad. Maybe it was Mike the whole time.
Yeah.
Monica Lewinsky, we talk about that. We've covered her.
Yeah.
We revisited that. And like,
she was a kid.
She was 20, 21.
Yep. Literally.
I covered her on our show, on our podcast before. And the thing about Monica Lewinsky is, you know, because we go back and we revisit as you two did for I Am Not Your Muse. It's, you go back and you revisit, and as a mature person, as an adult, also you have life experiences and you're like, oh, I know what went down here, even if it was in the 1880s, right? You're like, I know what went down here. And you go back and you're like, she was 21. She was making stupid mistakes publicly. Mm-hmm. An older woman who should have protected her from making these stupid mistakes used her for a political sort of thing. But also, yes, he's in the wrong. And they impeached him, but she got all of the backlash.
Yeah.
All of it.
She got all the backlash. So, she was 21, 22, making stupid mistakes.
Oh, God,
please don't judge me on those years. Like,
she couldn't make a living. She couldn't, you know, I will say that the rise of the sex tape, I kind of love it in the way that it really like flipped the script, as they used to say, on like these women could at least make money from a bad situation where something like that could have, you know, I mean, one could argue that Paris Hilton did not need to make money, or Kim Kardashian did not need to make money.
No, but also fine.
But the idea they could turn this into a reality show. Can you imagine if that had been open to Monica Lewinsky, or if she could go on like a Housewives or something like that? Yeah. She's fine now. She went on and got her master's and like, you know, she's, but we revisit it, to your point, Lori.
I think
you,
we came around because we changed. We changed. And I'm very thankful to have self-reflection. I don't know where it came from, but suddenly one day, 40s, and because I think a lot of women don't get there, and I hope that they do. Yeah. You know, like,
I've always said that, like, it's okay to be wrong. I've been wrong. I've said racist things. I've said ignorant. Shut up. You know, every one of my stories, Lavetta, every one of my stories. I've done, like, I want to say, like, as white women in the world, we are given so much misinformation. And as aware white women, I'll say aware because no one likes the word awake. We are trying to navigate that information. And it's something that, like, mattered to me in my early 20s. I started, like, well, what is that really what happened? Like history. And what, and I was curious. And, you know, I think when you're an artist, you tend to be more curious. It tends, because art is made by people who are trying to change something. And so,
agreed. Yeah,
I think that it's okay for a white woman to say, oh, I really believed it. I was fed this crap. I can change. I'm sorry. Like, I can do better. And I think that's what's happening now is that, especially white women, because we're the reason he's the president. I'm not us, but you know what I'm saying.
Yes. No, not us.
To be able to say, oh, I was given bad information. I don't want to be a bad person. I certainly don't want to destroy the world. Maybe yeah, I am a little
digging
racist.
Your heels in,
you know,
digging your heels in makes it so much worse, right? Like the alternative is kind of where we're at, you know, just to not acknowledge that you can be wrong. Yo, everybody's wrong, like at one point or another.
It's not the hardest thing for humans. People to admit, you know, when
and I say it, that's why I say all the time, like, I've been racist, which is a terrible thing to say. I hate saying it, but like if other people could say it, like I'm just like, I'll go first.
And I think that's what's so great about the book, I Am Not Your Muse, because it challenges the reader and the audience to rethink, you know, that the way we look at that term, but also these women that had that moniker, like, and how can we update it and make it be a more accurate representation of what these women's contribution to the world and to art was. And so, and I think that's just, and also it's provocative, obviously, but yeah. I think it's just a great, like what Miriam was saying, like, we've all been wrong. Listen, and I always tell people, I'm like, Black people growing up, I would say homophobic things because it was in society. I didn't know that. Like, if you had asked me when I was younger, I was a kid, I get it. But I mean, like words that used to be out in the world, now we know better. That's why I also think this is a great time for your book, I Am Not Your Muse, because again, it's like, how can we rethink the things that we thought was true or the way we thought they were true? I'm sorry, I'm fighting with my mic. The way we thought they were true. And I just think it's such a beautiful, beautiful idea. And I love it that you ladies put it, and it's an homage to women and how women are seen historically. So thank you so much. I love, love, love that title. I think it's, like I said, I hope you sell lots and lots and lots of books.
I'm going to point out that it's a book that sits on my coffee table, like out there. And I love that, like my kids now can like pick it up, look at it. It's going to be information that's not hidden. And then people, friends who come over, it's just there, you know, and it's a great book to kind of open, catch one or two women. Oh, that's interesting. It's not, you know what I mean? It doesn't.
Yeah. Our other books are like that too. They're like digestible. Like you don't have to sit and read the whole thing, because I know our attention spans are all over the place.
It's not chronological.
We're drained of energy.
Yeah.
But also with we chose, all of our books are illustrated by the wonderful Maria, because we could have used like historical photographs, but we want people to use their imaginations again. Mm-hmm. Remember that? Mm-hmm. Remember how great it was to use your imagination?
No,
and we thought that illustrations would like boost that, as opposed to, I don't know, you kind of look at a historical photo and it's there and that's it. And you know,
it's an art book. It's an art book on your table, but it'll also give you information. It's
with
beautiful.
a lot of research.
I can imagine.
I think somebody said in like maybe like the New York books, like, oh, it's like the perfect coffee table book meets art history textbook, but it's actually interesting, like you want to read it.
Yes.
So it's like striding the line of, it's pretty to look at, but there's lots of great info to learn too.
Yeah,
and no, I try it's to not use boring. Like a, thank God.
I try to use an approachable voice to like, you know, because I think that art and history and everything like that is for everybody. I mean, especially art tends to have like airs on it and gatekeeping. And I think I worked in galleries and stuff, and that's not for me. It's like, everyone has eyes. You don't have to know everything about a subject or a person or a painting to appreciate it. You can appreciate it at different levels. And if it intrigues you, you can further research if you want to, or you can just leave it at the surface, but they're all of value. You know what I mean?
Yes.
I love that. But thank you so much. I also love it that kudos to you ladies for including all kinds of ladies from all over the world, different ethnicities. Right. I love that. Thank kudos to you for that.
Only scratching the surface. That was important. Yeah.
Exactly. We've all been doing cool things all over the world, right? So we should talk about that. And I think that, you know, right now, like, female empowerment is important, but it's also important to recognize the past, since the writers of history have held the cards, you know? And so just because people decided not to write about them, like the New York Times with Louise Blanchard Bethune, doesn't mean it didn't happen. So I think it's powerful to know that, you know, in 1860s, things were happening. Like, 300 years ago, things were still happening.
So, like, no pressure, that, like, but what's your next book?
Well, Maria has some other book projects going on. I'm actually writing my first novel, which is, it's totally new. I don't know, fiction. I don't know what I'm thinking, but it's very much based on all of the research I have done in the past, plus a little science fiction. So my two nerdy worlds, time travel, a little bit, a variation of time travel.
Come on.
I can't wait. Hurry up.
Yeah, I'm trying.
That's why you're in Paris, to do some research.
I know, that's why I'm in Paris, because I'm fact checking, like, places I want accurate. Like, don't you hate when you're like watching a show set in LA or set in New York, and you're like, wait, that's, when you turn that corner, that street isn't there, or, you know, when it's like,
Yes, the Brooklyn. What is it? The Brooklyn Pier, the Brooklyn Boardwalk. What is it called? I don't remember. You go there. It's in Brooklyn Heights.
The Promenade.
The Brooklyn Promenade. They shoot every single. They're walking along the Promenade, and then they're in Queens. And I'm like, you can't do that.
Or like Midtown to like you know, Lower Manhattan, and I'm like, hey,
that's not gonna happen.
That was a $20 cab ride or a subway you had to wait for. Okay.
Yeah.
Not happening in my novel, ladies.
It's time travel also, I guess, in a way.
Yeah.
True. I mean, I always say when I wake up, I'm like, is this Earth 2.3? I hope so. I hope this is not the real one. So.
Which iteration
that
are
sounds
we on?
Right.
Yeah. But, oh my God, thank you so much, ladies, for joining us. Where can our listeners, find the book and also find you on your different social platforms and social media?
The book is available from all online retailers. I'm not going to name the big one, but that big one and all the little ones.
But also shop your local bookstore. Yeah. Go to your local bookshop. Yeah. They can always order it. Usually it only takes a couple of days to arrive.
We do have pretty good distribution in the United States, and we have, they're in a bunch of museums as well, which is really fun and nerdy for us, an achievement. And we have separate social medias. I'm at the Lori Zimmer, and Maria is at Maria Krasinski.
Maria Krasinski.
Also, the Lori Zimmer on Substack. I'm actually continuing some of the women's stories as well.
Substack.
Yeah. Like, ones that didn't make it, because 31 is so limited. I mean, huge, but I had to pick something somewhere. Otherwise it'd be like this and no one would buy it.
Yeah. It should have been like I'm Not Your Muse, Volume 1.
Yeah, that would be.
That's a great idea, Maria.
That's a great idea.
Oh my God, thank you so much again for joining us. Listeners, that wraps it up for this wonderful, wonderful conversation with Lori and Maria. Again, I Am Not Your Muse. Pick it up at your small bookstores. You know, your big bookstores, but independent bookstores, just pick it up. Museums, pick it up. Miriam is showing it to you now. Guys, remember to follow us on all the things. Also, you can, if you write us a 5-star review, we would pretty, you could be our muses. I mean, you're always already our muses, like,
but
you know, as our listeners.
But in a meaningful way, and you're also your own person. Okay.
Yes.
Very reciprocal. We all inspire each other.
You're a different kind of muse.
let's reanalyze what that word means now. Okay.
So, I mean, if you could write us a 5-star review, we appreciate that. But also, more importantly, as we say every week, don't just tell your friends about the podcast. Copy the link and send it to them. Don't just tell them. Copy the link and send it to them, because everyone's so busy. And so that will really help us out. Miriam, how else can they help and find the show and help to support the show?
Well, we have an Instagram. We have a TikTok. It is both Notorious Women Podcast. It's so simple, you guys. Follow us there. We do different things on each platform. We're on YouTube. You can, if you're not listening to the episode on YouTube, you can, if you would like. We have a Gmail. It's notoriouswmpod@gmail.com. And that is that.
Yeah. And don't forget our Patreon, too. If you want to send us some, a little moolah. And I mean, because did they used to pay their muses or no? Just maybe in food.
Well, we need cash, but
we need cash.
Thankless.
Okay. Yeah, exactly. I'm all about, as Cardi B says, all a bad bitch need is what? Money. Okay.
Yeah. Money talks.
Money talks.
Money makes
so
it go
if you
want
to do that, you can help us out at our Patreon. That's patreon.com/notoriouswomen. But thank you again, as always, Lori and Maria, thank you for joining us and just taking the time out to have this wonderful conversation. And Maria,
thanks,
I hope you I appreciate it.
Thank you, Miriam, and I
appreciate it. Yeah. And Maria, we hope that you are sufficiently iced down.
Feeling
and
good.
Recovering.
Show your medal once
more
time.
One more time, you guys.
Listeners.
Yeah. Yes!
My pride and joy.
Oh, thank you so much, ladies. And thank you, listeners. We will see you next week or next time. All right. Bye-bye.
Bye.
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 Produced by Atavita Studios. Connect your voice to the world.